It's Thursday, September 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Republican presidential candidates spar at a debate in California. Croatia admits more than 5,000 migrants.
The biggest challenge for the Croatian authorities is dealing with the numbers that look set to come their way. Several thousand, tens of thousands likely to use this route over the coming weeks and months.
And we'll hear how fans can watch the late singer Whitney Houston in concert 3 years after she died. It's all ahead. Republican presidential frontrunner and billionaire Donald Trump took center stage Wednesday at his party's second major debate in the nomination race. 10 challengers joined the real estate tycoon at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. Trump touted his extensive experience as a businessman to challenge his opponents. He also said he would get along with world leaders.
We don't get along with China. We don't get along with the heads of Mexico. We don't get along with anybody. And yet at the same time, they rip us left and right. They take advantage of us economically and every other way. We get along with nobody. I will get along, I think, with Putin, and I will get along with others. And we will have a much more stable world.
Trump's anti-Washington rhetoric has propelled him to the top in surveys of Republican voters. A CBS New York Times poll this week showed him with 27% support, just ahead of the 23% figure for another political novice, retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson. Well, some observers believe the sole female seeking the Republican nomination, former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina, may have gained some momentum when Trump backed down from a disparaging comment about her appearance.
I think women all over this country heard very clearly what Mr. Trump said.
I think she's got a beautiful face, and I think she's a beautiful woman.
On the subject of the Iran nuclear deal, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul and former Florida Governor Jeb Bush differed from most of their Republican colleagues and said the next president should not immediately reverse the agreement. International Edition's Ray Kugel spoke with VOA national correspondent Jim Malone shortly after the debate concluded.
And Jim, what's your analysis of what the Republican hopefuls had to say about the frontrunner and other issues?
Well, Ray, there was a whole lot of knocking around going on in this debate, and it had a totally different dynamic than the first debate that Donald Trump effectively dominated and then used that to sort of rise in the polls quite dramatically. I think the outcome on this one is a little more mixed. Trump certainly held his own. He got into some spats with some of his rivals, including Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky. Jeb Bush, the former Florida governor, they went at it a few times, including over the decision to go into Iraq during Bush's brother's reign, George W. Bush, the former president. There were some testy moments between Trump and Bush, between Trump and Carly Fiorina, the only woman who's in the Republican field right now. They're both coming from a business background. They were trying to go at each other about their business records. And what was interesting was someone we haven't heard much from lately, the New Jersey governor, Chris Christie, broke in there and said, you know, we're happy you guys had great careers and you did well, but for the average person out there, this is not what they're interested in. So there was some pushback, I think, tonight from some of the professional politicians. And I, you know, the outsiders, especially Donald Trump and Ben Carson, someone else we've seen come up in the polls, were not as prominent. Carly Fiorina, though, did make an impression on stage, and I think she'll be around for the next debate as well. So a mixed sort of feeling coming out of this debate. But I bet you a lot of the rivals of Donald Trump now feel better after this debate. They think they're in the game again.
Jim, did anyone make a mistake that could stick and perhaps drive them out of the campaign?
I didn't hear anything or see anything quite like that. I will wonder about Dr. Ben Carson, who's been trumpeted for rising in the polls right behind Donald Trump. He's a favorite of conservative Christian voters. He's billed himself as a political outsider. it seemed at times during the second debate he kind of got lost in the shuffle. He wasn't as forceful, didn't get as much time to speak. But that applies to a number of the other rivals, including people like Senator Rand Paul, Mike Huckabee, the former Arkansas governor. John Kasich had a strong debate at times. I think all of these contenders had moments where they were strong this evening, so nobody dominated. What does that mean for the race? Well, if Trump is not dominating as much as he was, I think this sort of jumbles the race a bit now, and I think everyone's going to feel the race is as wide open as it was before, and that maybe Trump is not got the kind of preeminent status he had before.
You mentioned Carly Fiorina, very articulate, and the only woman in the race. How do you think her performance down on the big stage will take her beyond?
She had some very strong moments. One in particular, talking about this issue we have in this country called Planned Parenthood, an organization that many Republicans oppose because they don't like abortion services. She gave a very impassioned plea on that, why Republicans should stand against the organization based on some recent controversial videos. So Carly Fiorina got some rounds of applause. She made a strong appearance. I think she'll be back. So the field that we see right now, there may be some others who may drop away over time, but right now I don't see anybody based on this debate feeling they have to leave the arena.
Well, what's next for the Republicans?
Well, they will have another monthly debate in October, and also that's when the Democrats will start debating Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and the rest of the Democratic field next month. So between now and then, of course, the Republicans will try to build off the performances in this debate. And I would guess that most of them feel they have something to build on, and this race will continue to be intense.
Okay, thank you, Jim. That's VOA's national correspondent, Jim Malone.
And my thanks to International Edition's Ray Kugel. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what is social media saying about that big debate last night?
Oh, gosh, they have a lot to say about the debate, as you can imagine. We've heard a lot of the elements that Jim has been talking about in that piece. The same thing that people are saying in social media. They're kind of saying that Trump and Fiorina were the two that kind of shined. Carly Fiorina, there's one term that I saw somebody tweeted out. They said Carly crashed the boys club. And it really was a stark picture. And you look at all 11 candidates up there, she being the only woman up there. And I think she used that to her advantage. She was, you know, shot back against Donald Trump, which a lot of people liked, said we were anticipating this kind of Trump versus Fiorina fight. And they were not disappointed with some of the comments that went back and forth between the two of them. I think they were thinking Donald would maybe double down on what he said, but he kind of apologized to her. Trump getting Jeb Bush to talk about his brother, saying, you know, Jeb Bush saying that my brother kept us safe when he was president. A lot of people noting that that's something Jeb tried to get away from. He's trying to get away from his family, get away from his name. His campaign sign is just his first name, Jeb, with an exclamation point. So he doesn't even push Bush on his campaign sign. So they're saying that was a big get for Trump, trying to get him to defend his brother, talk about his family. A lot of people praising CNN as well, saying they stayed on message, were better than Fox, asking good questions. So a lot of praise for them. We'll see if they can live up to that with the Democrats when the Democrats go on to debate next month. And then meanwhile, while we are talking about the Democrats, we had Bernie Sanders was live tweeting the debate as it happened with his own commentary. I think it was hashtag debate with Bernie. And he was saying, is it over yet? And making some funny comments, but also some serious ones about the topics that they were discussing and how he thinks those ideas are wrong for America. And then Hillary Clinton sent out an email that was getting a lot of buzz on social media. And she said in the subject line, my reaction to the GOP debate. And it was just an animated gif of her rolling her eyes. Yeah. So it was a lot of people saying that was the perfect response, kind of not giving them, too much attention, just kind of saying, brushing this off and focusing on other things. I'm not really paying attention to what they have to say. So an interesting use of some new media by her, for sure. I want to touch on hashtag I Stand With Ahmed. We talked about this yesterday. The young boy who brought a clock to school was mistaken for a bomb. He got detained. Well, now all these celebrities are weighing in. He's getting invitations left and right. He's been on the morning shows here in the U.S. Mark Zuckerberg has invited him to Facebook. And President Obama tweeted out, he said, cool clock, Ahmed. Want to bring it to the White House? And that tweet's gotten over 375,000 retweets. So Ahmed looks like he's going to the White House. So good for him. Nice story after a bad incident down in Texas.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to work out for him.
Yes, hopefully. I think
okay,
so.
Great. All right, thank you very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Croatia says some 5,600 migrants have entered the country since Hungary sealed its border with Serbia. I'm joined now on the line by Henry Ridgewell, who is at the Serbian-Croatian border. Henry, what is the refugee situation like where you are now? I believe you're in the town of Sid.
That's correct, yes, the town of Sid on the Serbian side of the border, where yesterday, as you said, several thousand refugees began to arrive. I was here when the first trickle started to arrive in the morning, and that trickle turned into a torrent as busloads of refugees were brought by the Serbian authorities, and also some other refugees, migrants, had paid for their own taxis to come to this town because word had spread that Croatia is opening it to the migrants, will allow passage across the country. So it does seem like this is going to become the new route for the refugees and migrants to enter Europe. This morning, it is a bit quieter, but that's simply because the time it takes to bus the refugees across Serbia to this northern point, the crossing point with Croatia. We're expecting several busloads more refugees and migrants to arrive this afternoon. In fact, in the last 5 minutes, two buses have arrived with about 60 migrants and refugees each on board, tailed by about a dozen taxis who had all driven up from the capital, Belgrade. So the numbers are building here, and certainly this does seem to be the new flashpoint, a new bottleneck for the refugees coming and heading towards Western Europe.
Well, unfortunately, that area has had a dark history when you look back into the Balkan Wars of the 1990s. Now, apparently, authorities have dispatched some demining experts to mark minefields left over from that conflict of 20 years ago.
That's right. Of course, 1991, this area saw some of the initial, some of the worst fighting of the Balkans Wars as the Yugoslav and Serb forces invaded Croatia. And there's a lot of historical landmarks to remind people here of that fighting, buildings still with pockmarks, with bullet holes, and so on. And as you say, minefields as well. The Croatian authorities insist that the minefields are very well demarcated. A lot of the land they are walking through is farmland, which has obviously been plowed many times since that war ended. So they say generally it's safe, but they are worried that if some of the migrants do stray off course to the path that seems to be being created at the moment, if they stray into areas that aren't demarcated or haven't been explored by those demining teams, then there could be dangers. So that's just something that the Croatian authorities have warned about. There are Facebook posts as well going up in Arabic as well to warn the migrants coming over. But for the moment, I think that's a secondary fear. The biggest challenge for the Croatian authorities is dealing with the numbers that look set to come their way. Several thousand, tens of thousands likely to use this route over the coming weeks and months. Croatia's not yet set up to deal with that. There aren't any camps. There isn't the infrastructure really to deal with it. This is a very rural part of Croatia where they are entering. There are a couple of railway lines, and so far the authorities have used those railway lines to transport the refugees from the border towards Zagreb, allowing them free passage. And from there, the refugees are being taken to the border with Slovenia. And this could be the next challenge for the refugees, because Slovenia has said it may start imposing border controls and it will uphold the Dublin agreements and the Schengen agreements, that part of the EU rules that say migrants or asylum seekers must register intentions when they arrive. So that could be the next challenge for the migrants. But for now, many of them are very happy that they've managed to bypass Hungary and find a new route towards their destinations in Germany and Sweden and other parts of Western Europe.
Thanks very much, Henry. That is Henry Ridgewell reporting. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
NASA astronaut Scott Kelly and Russian cosmonaut Mikhail Kornienko recently reached the halfway point of their one-year mission aboard the International Space Station. The two have been up in the space station since March and aren't scheduled to return to Earth until the spring of 2016. Typically, an ISS expedition lasts between 4 and 6 months. The one-year mission was developed so that scientists can gain an understanding of the effects of extended spaceflight on the human body. This knowledge is quite important for NASA to develop plans of sending humans deeper into space, such as on flights to and from Mars. NASA also says that the research conducted over the year in space mission may also benefit people here on Earth, helping doctors, for example, to better assist patients who've been confined to bed for long periods of time. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, fans get to take another look at the late singer Whitney Houston in concert. U.S. state and city officials and their Chinese counterparts signed a series of agreements at a summit in Los Angeles this week aimed at reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles.
At the conclusion of the two-day event Wednesday, delegates at the summit signed the Climate Leaders Declaration, pledging to establish targets to limit greenhouse emissions. The meeting, known as the U.S.-China Climate Leaders Summit, was the first of its kind at the provincial and city level between the two nations. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden closed the meeting by addressing the significance of joint efforts between the United States and China. Biden says the steps taken at the summit will have global impact.
Our leadership is vital, China and America, in achieving successful global climate agreement in Paris. The steps announced here unite our efforts, give us some momentum to reach these global agreements.
Special Envoy and State Counselor Yang Jiechi says this meeting sets a positive tone in advance of Chinese President Xi Jinping's state visit to the U.S.
Today, the breadth and depth of this relationship has reached an unprecedented level. This relationship is not just crucial to the well-being of our two peoples, it is taking on greater strategic and global significance.
The summit fulfills a key element of the U.S.-China joint announcement on climate change laid out by President Barack Obama and Chinese President Xi Jinping last November. During Obama's visit to Beijing last year, the U.S. announced a goal of reducing carbon emissions by 26% to 28% below its 2005 level by 2025. While China, for the first time, committed to peak its carbon emissions by 2030. The agreement was seen as a landmark moment for the world's two worst emitters of climate change-causing greenhouse gases. Local governments in China and the United States made their own commitments. Beijing and Guangzhou committed to set peak years for carbon dioxide emissions by 2020, 10 years before the national target. California has set a goal of reducing emissions by 80 to 90% below 1990 levels by 2050. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
This is International Edition. It's been more than 3 years since the late pop diva Whitney Houston died. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about a holographic Whitney Houston concert planned for next year.
Shauna, this is going to be a hologram of Whitney Houston that's going to be in concert. Explain that.
Okay. Well, in 2016, Whitney Houston, the hologram, will be making an appearance somewhere in the U.S. And so this will be a visual representation of Whitney in concert. So it will include this hologram singing. It'll include choreography, as it were. Whitney was not a very well-known dancer. It will, as you say, give folks the opportunity who've never seen her before to do so. And then also give those of us who have had the opportunity to see her and loved her a chance to experience Whitney Houston as we did in concert. But then also in other ways, because they're going to expand this beyond just her performing and include other elements as well.
Now, this has got the approval of the Houston estate. It's not just, this is not just something somebody cooked up. The people who are actually in charge of her estate have approved this, right?
Yes, and it's taken a couple of years. They were approached, Pat Houston and Sissy Houston, her mom, were approached with this idea a couple of years ago, but it was still very fresh, her death. And they weren't certain that it would be the best thing and that it might be a little insensitive. But now they have agreed. And so we know that 2016, a group called Hologram USA will be the ones to create this. And what I think is interesting is that they're going to do one concert in the U.S. It'll be broadcast online. And then beyond that, there'll be like a year-long residency, and then they'll take it internationally. So Whitney will be going on a world tour, if you will.
And this is not the first time that this kind of thing has been attempted, right? There was one with Snoop Dogg and Tupac, and a couple of other artists have done this too.
Absolutely. In fact, this company, Hologram USA, they've done Buddy Holly, they've done Roy Orbison, they've done Liberace, Patsy Cline. So they've done some pretty high level celebrities in the past. And my understanding is they've done them justice, which is why the Houston estate agreed to work with this company in particular.
It doesn't look kind of like ghosty like you would imagine. It actually looks like the person is really there. It's not like you can see through them or something.
Yeah, but it's very interesting. They did one of Michael Jackson not too long ago. And again, it was, you know, fairly soon after his death. It brings up really interesting emotions because on one hand, it's exciting to see them again. But then on the other hand, you know that it's not them in real life. They're gone. And it just, you know, it's this is 2016 technology. What can you say?
Well, if you have any comment about this, please let Shauna know. You can hit her up on Twitter. She is at VOA Lady DJ. You can also send a tweet to at VOA underscore music. You can listen for her show, The Soul Lounge, on our website, voanews.com.
The music of Whitney Houston. Well, that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Russia is expanding its military support for the regime of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, whom it has supported throughout a brutal conflict that has taken the lives of over 250,000 people. Secretary of State John Kerry called Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov on September 15th, expressing the United States' concern that a Russian military buildup in Syria could further escalate the conflict, lead to a greater loss of innocent life, increase refugee flows, and risk confrontation with the anti-ISIL coalition operating in Syria. Russia claims its military support for Assad is aimed at defeating terrorists like ISIL. President Barack Obama said September 11th that Russia and the United States' common view of the ISIL threat creates a potentially converging interest. But, said President Obama, the bad news is that Russia continues to believe that Assad is somebody that is worthy of continuing support.
It has been my view and the view of the United States government that as long as Assad is there, he has alienated so much of the Syrian population that it will not be possible to arrive at a peaceful ceasefire and political settlement. And you'll continue to have this vacuum that's filled by extremists.
President Obama said, "You can't continue to double down on a strategy that's doomed to failure. If, however, the Russians are willing to work with us and the 60-nation coalition we've put together, then there's the possibility of a political settlement in which Assad would be transitioned out, and a new coalition of moderate, secular, and inclusive forces could come together and restore order in the country. That, said President Obama, is our goal."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.